Welcome to the Matt and Jeff Show. We're glad to have you back here again with us. It's, you know, we took a week off.
We did.
But we're back, and we're ready to get going. How you doing today, Matt?
I'm doing fan-frickin-tastic. How are you doing, Jeff?
That's really good to know since you went to work today.
I know.
And I took the day off. Yeah. I was recuperating from Cincy Comic Con.
Yeah.
I just want to give a great shout-out to those guys. They put together a great show. Really appreciate all the efforts of Tony Moore, Kara, Kendall Swafford, Bill. You guys did great, and I really appreciated all of that. I had a booth there this year.
You did.
For the third year. It was great, and I really enjoyed getting out there and meeting fans and talking to people, doing some drawings.
Drawings.
You know, getting my sketch on. And so I really appreciate all of those that came and attended, those who purchased things from me, and, you know, their support means a lot to me. So thank you from the bottom of my heart, and thanks to all of the henchmen seeing to all of our needs during the weekend. So thank you very much. It was a great con. I highly recommend it. Hope to see a lot more people there next year.
I really enjoyed your Oscar speech right there.
You know, I'd like to thank my wife, my son,
God.
Yeah, definitely want to thank God.
You got to throw some props out to God.
Oh yeah, well, you know, he got me started on this.
And the cocaine, right?
I don't have any of that.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I didn't even have a Coca-Cola. I just drank water, man.
Maybe the drugs.
No.
Booze.
No drugs. 80s. No booze.
What kind of convention is this?
There were cosplayers.
Oh yeah, that works.
You know, there were cosplayers. There was a cosplay contest on Sunday. It was great. Yeah. I didn't attend it because I was still getting my drawing on.
His drawings.
You know, I was still cranking out commissions. So
yeah, it actually was a really good convention. I attended myself and supported Jeff here in his art. Being an artist, so for any of you fans listening that are in the Cincinnati area, check it out sometime. The Cincy Comic Con.
So, well worth it. That brings us to today's topic.
Yeah, you're kind of pausing there. You're scaring me.
It's a heavy one.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a heavy topic.
Yeah, you're packing some heat over here.
Oh, there's definitely some heat involved.
Are we going on a drive-by?
There might be some x-ray vision. There might be some heat vision.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of really cool things that we kind of need to cover.
Yeah. So I should put the gun away I've got in my boot?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you won't need that.
All right. Fair enough.
Not unless Batman comes and kicks our butt again for
wanting
to talk about Superman.
I'm ready for him if he calls in again.
If you're sure, man. Because I'm pretty sure he could take you.
We'll see.
Anyway. So, today's topic is about Christianity in comics.
Yeah.
There are a lot of parallels.
Yes.
That have entered into these comic book characters. And there's a lot of them that we really love. And the first one we're going to focus on is Superman. We know he turned 75 years old a couple years back, back in 2013. Yeah. You know, we were all being reminiscent at that time and really thinking, oh, you know, how great is Superman?
Yeah.
Well, some things came up that I didn't really realize initially as I was going back and doing some research. I didn't know that originally Schuster and Siegel were going to name Ma and Pa Kent Mary and Joseph.
Hmm.
We ended up with Martha and Jonathan Kent, which is great.
Yeah.
They were originally thought to be Mary and Joseph. Superman kind of comes out as, you know, a representation of Christ himself.
Oh, yeah. The Messiah.
Yeah.
The chosen one.
I mean, here's a guy who comes out of the sky, right? He comes out of the heavens. Granted, it's in a spaceship versus being born of God and Mary. He comes down as a little babe in the middle of nowhere. Hmm. I mean, Smallville,
Kansas,
certainly doesn't strike me as being any fancier than Bethlehem was.
Mm.
So, you know, he lands there. Ma and Pa Kent, they take him, they teach him, they love him, they raise him as their own, just like Mary and Joseph did with Jesus Christ. And as he gets older, you know, his powers are developing and he's getting all these abilities, you know. And then he journeys out. And he takes a walk, if you will, out in the northern wilderness, you know, seeking out the fortress of solitude where he gets to do what? He communes with his father, who's not on this earth, and, you know, through a hologram, and gets information on who he is, his past, what he's supposed to do, you know, how he's supposed to be. And here he is, he's 30 years old.
Well, yeah, he's kind of learning who he is.
He's 30 years old. He starts his, you know, his mission, if you will, same time frame that Jesus Christ did.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know we just did the whole Superman episode.
Oh,
but, you know, we're talking about Christianity and comics. I mean, you have to throw Superman into the mix.
Right.
He's probably one of the most influential in most of Christianity or Christians' lives today, and just kind of what he stands for. And you take, like you said, the parallels of Superman, and you put him up against the parallels of Jesus Christ, and it's a dead heat. You know, like, they're just mimicking one another in a sense. But I think we need to peel back a little bit the layers of Superman. You know,
kind of like an onion.
Yeah.
Matt loves onions. He likes them caramelized.
I like just peeling things.
You know, you can actually just do a caramel onion for him, and he'll eat it. He loves that crap.
Yeah. Yeah, well, crap. Yeah.
He's peeling it back.
Right. So, I think with Superman, you know, he was created in 1933. We've said this once before. He came into play in 1938, but he was created by, you know, Joe Shuster and Jerry Siegel, two teenagers who were Jewish Americans.
Right. Yes.
We know that Superman stood for truth, justice, and the American way.
It was during a wartime, too. I mean, there was a lot
it was the Great Depression.
There was the Great Depression. You had, you know, the stuff going on in Germany where they were starting to...
Hitler.
You know, round up the Jewish people and putting them in internment camps. And so there was a lot going on that really...
Made
Shuster and Siegel think about things differently than what they probably would have as a normal teenager at the time.
Right. You had Hitler starting to come to power. He was, you know, expanding, you know, his armies throughout Europe. People were getting scared and worried. You had the United States battling the Great Depression. You also had Japan starting to invade China, which didn't look good. And you had all this, you know, anti-Semitic attitude going on in Europe that was swimming its way across the pond to the United States. So not only did Americans of all ethnicity and religion start to worry, but the Jewish people were worried themselves.
Exactly.
So like you said, you've got Joe and Jerry, these two guys that are like, wow, we got to put something out there that takes people's minds off of all this worry and doubt of what's going to happen in the future. And they create Superman.
Right. Messiah.
Right. In a sense, you know, they
savior of the world.
They resurrect Supes out of, you know, part of tradition and history. The Golem in tights, you know, being this mystical creation that the Jews believed could be summoned to protect them during persecution. And this was something really big in their faith during the Middle Ages. It's their savior on paper. They created Superman to bring about hope.
Yes.
And peace. You know, something to set, you know, the stomachs and the minds aside of the Jewish American people. What we've seen is it's just progressed into Christian themes today.
Right.
Now, hopefully Superman does hold a lot of truth still for the Jewish people today. I think that would be great if he did.
Oh, I certainly hope he does. You know, he's got a rich history that, you know, I think inspires people. Whether you're a fan of his comic book or not, he's an inspirational character.
Yes, very inspirational. I like the idea that, you know, Jerry and Joe took a lot of Jewish principles and applied them to this character, you know, and especially his name.
Wait, heat vision is a Jewish principle?
Heat vision? Could be.
Uh-oh.
I'm cool with it.
Yeah. Why not?
You know,
X-ray we all vision. Should have it.
Steel. Strength.
Yeah, I like strength.
Leap tall bounds.
That's right. He couldn't fly initially.
Yeah.
That came much later.
But like I was saying, I like how they tie a lot of stuff back to their faith and just puts people at ease. You know, you come to see Superman being, you know, the Messiah or the Chosen One. Now, A lot of people may disagree or not like that look or view of him, but, you know, dig around. You find that out in the history of why he was created. Mm-hmm. And his name, Kal-El, you know, stems from Emmanuel, you know, meaning God is with us, dating back to the Hebrew Bible.
That's an interesting fun fact.
It is.
I did not realize that one yet.
So. That his alien name is
a Jewish name. His alien name was actually a Jewish
name. Yeah.
Jewish name.
So. I thought that was pretty interesting.
That's pretty cool.
You know, I think with Superman, everybody's going to take what they want out of him.
Yeah.
What he means to them. I mean, he's an extremely influential character to me, which I know I've mentioned a couple of times in our podcast.
Yeah. And so. You saw it in the Donner films.
Yes.
You know, in the 1978.
Yes, probably mid to late 70s
Donner
when his films were out.
You know, Superman, at the end of that film, there he is. He's flying through the sky, and he's looking down, and he's smiling, and people are looking up, and
yeah.
You know, here he is. He's a savior, you know. He just mm-hmm. protected them from all this. And I think even as you go further on in the movies, Bryan Singer tried to do it. He didn't do it very well.
Yeah.
He certainly was trying to pull all of that Christian mythology and focus into his film with Superman Returns. And I think he was trying. I don't think he was very successful with it.
No.
We've kind of torn Bryan Singer a new one on that several times, so I'm going to let it go this time.
We might just have to put Singer to rest like we did Daredevil.
Yeah, I'm going to let it go this time and just acknowledge that he tried to do that. And I think you see more of it as you go into Man of Steel. You know, Zack Snyder brought it up.
Oh, yeah. I don't really get it out of Return of Superman.
No, not at all.
I feel like it was, hey, how can I get Chris Reeve back on screen and flush that out and make everybody feel like Superman never left, like he was always there.
But see, there was a part of it where he had gone, and then he came back to the Earth, you know? And I think there were people who were wondering, if you remember at the beginning, Superman had been gone for...
Yeah.
A long time. They didn't know where he'd been. You know, maybe he was hanging out in the sun, you know, soaking up the rays.
Yeah.
Needed a good tan. I don't know. But he decided to come back, and the people were once again in awe of him. And some people were a little bit like, what are you doing back now? You know, you left us.
Right.
So I think that it had some of that. And I think that he was trying to look at it.
Like the second coming of
Christ? Maybe like a second coming kind of deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think there were those kinds of parallels put into it and links that I think people might perceive.
Mm.
But a lot of people probably didn't get that. You know, like I said, there was a lot of other things he threw into that movie that I think detracted from
definitely
what Superman was and means to at least me and I think to you as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Man of Steel.
Yeah, I want to touch on Man of Steel.
Did a great job bringing stuff back in. So why don't you
going forward
go ahead and talk a little bit about that.
You know, like what Jeff just said, I think it's great that, you know, Zack Snyder in his films so far with Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman portray this perfectly in subliminal tones throughout his movies that I think are missed by fans and critics. They just don't get it. They're too busy of judging the DC films. Oh, it's not like Marvel. And I know, Jeff, you got pretty adamant about this, you know, in a couple podcasts back, maybe even the Superman episode. But I think people just need to look for the symbolism in DC's films.
Oh.
It's there. It smacks you in the face. And I think Zack Snyder brings it.
I think they just need to wake up and realize that DC's not Marvel.
Right. I agree.
They're supposed to be different.
I agree.
But,
you know,
if you're a critic... Look at it as a new film. That's what it is.
What I like so much about Man of Steel and even Batman versus Superman is the symbolism of parallel to Jesus Christ with Superman. You know, especially with Jor-El and Jonathan Kent having such a strong influence on him, whether alive or dead. You know,
right.
There's definitely some key lines in the movie itself. You know, Jor-El even says, "Goodbye, my son, my hopes and dreams travel with you."
Right.
Which I thought was just very powerful.
Yeah,
you know,
certainly.
Sending, you know, Kal-El off.
He's sending his son out to...
You know, Laura, though, his mother, says he'll be an outcast.
Right.
They'll kill him. Jor-El responds back, "How? He'll be a god to them."
Right.
You know, and then Jor-El also down the line says, you know, "What if a child dreamed of becoming something other than what society had intended. What if a child aspired to something greater? You know, I think just very powerful lines coming from a father-like figure pushing his son into the world and saying, it's now up to you.
And I think that those lines are there to make us pause and think and kind of look at ourselves and look at our own lives. Are we trying to better things?
Mm-hmm.
We certainly can be greater than I think we perceive that we can be. We need to get that out of that. We need to look at it and go that. I also really liked Kevin Costner's Jonathan Kent is talking to him and mm-hmm. says, you'll always be my son.
Yeah.
And you know, being a father kind of tore me up because I kind of feel the same way with my boy. You know, no matter what, he's always going to be my son.
Yeah.
I think it really harkened back to Joseph.
Yes.
You know, Joseph was not
definitely
Jesus' father.
Right.
But I'm pretty darn sure that he took every opportunity to teach him everything.
Yeah.
I bet you 10 to 1 that Jesus was as good a carpenter as his stepfather,
yeah,
if you will, as Joseph, who raised him.
Definitely.
And I'm sure he was taught a great work ethic and a lot of things to go along with being in this mortal realm. And I think that you're getting the same thing with Jonathan Kent mm-hmm. and his interactions with...
Oh, yeah.
With, I mean, Clark.
He accepted Clark for what he was and also tried to shield or protect him. I mean, even Jonathan Kent in Man mm-hmm. of Steel had some great lines. You know, one of them being, you're the answer, son. You're the answer to are we alone in the world
mm-hmm.
or the universe. He also says, I have to believe you were sent here for a reason. And even if it takes the rest of your life, you owe it to yourself to find out what that reason is.
Yeah.
Me having a stepson, I also really took to Jonathan Kent in Man of Steel and just saw, you know, how I could better myself as a stepdad,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and pushing forward of setting that example. You know, right there, you've got Jor-El possibly being God the Father himself, and you have Jonathan Kent being Joseph, you know, the husband of Mary. And you see the influences that both them have, alive and dead, and right. how impactful it is upon Clark in pushing him forward to who he will become mm-hmm. down the road. It just, you know, I think it probably struck you. It definitely struck
me.
Yeah. You know, and throughout Man of Steel, you start seeing the growth pattern
you know,
of Clark.
Totally. And, you know, one of my favorite scenes that took place in Man of Steel, you know, with Zod wanting him to give himself up.
Mm-hmm.
Where does he go to find solace? He goes to a church.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was a priest, a minister, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is he went into a church. He took some time to contemplate what he was, what he was going to do,
mm-hmm.
and to really ponder and think about it. And I think, you know, as a society, we need a little bit more of that. We need to step back and ponder. And I think that he's giving us that kind of an example
yeah.
that you would see from Jesus Christ. Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, here's, if you will, and I'm not trying in any way, shape, or form to take away from anything. But to me, while it is a much lesser extent, I see it as kind of his Garden of Gethsemane,
mm-hmm.
if you will, where he made that choice that, you know, he was going to go forward with saving the people and trying to save mm-hmm. the people, and he was going to do what he needed to do to protect the world. And it's not the same kind of significance because this is a movie,
right?
You know, it's right. make believe, it's fun, it's fake. You know, it's there to be enjoyable, but
superheroes,
right? But it's the same concept, I think, of trying to figure out how you're going to do it. And you know, Jesus certainly took on a lot more when he was in his Garden of Gethsemane than Superman did. But
oh, yes.
But, like yeah. I said, I'm just trying to draw comparisons here. And I think that there was one there.
Yeah.
There, certainly some...
Well, you see...
Some thought-provoked moments to that.
Definitely. I mean, you see a vulnerable Superman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, he's approaching a church. He's sitting. He's right. engaging with a priest. You know, and it draws me right back to the For Tomorrow series.
Right.
You know, where it's just a very in touch with himself kind of Superman, where he contemplates, you know, his existence,
mm-hmm.
you know, on Earth as an alien. What does it mean to be Superman? You know, and even in that scene of the film, you know, you see him sitting there, and then visible in the background is a large stained glass window or painting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like you said, it's Jesus Christ. He's kneeling. He's praying.
Right. He's praying.
You know.
He's seeking.
And
seeking the will of God.
Yeah, for a split second, you see Superman and you see God next to each other. And it's that dynamic that I think people miss, that it's like, whoa, Snyder just drew from...
Snyder put a lot of symbolism in there, and it continues on. I mean, you see it certainly in the...
Oh, it echoes throughout the film, and, you know, you can even see when he's on Zod's ship, and Jor-El, being the kind of apparition-type hologram, is guiding him to get out of the ship, and he pushes through the wall of the ship, and you see him float out. His arms just extend out as if he was, you know, Jesus opening his arms and being crucified and accepting the world itself. And then you see him shoot right down, boom, pick up
Lois Lane. Could also be, you know, kind of descending from heaven with an unseen heavenly host behind him too. I mean, there's certainly
a lot of different, whatever you want.
Right, you can draw a lot from it. And I think you saw the same thing in Batman versus Superman, where...
Oh, yeah. You know, it's like Man of Steel is the mission that Jesus starts on. Batman versus Superman is him living in the mission, and then, boom.
Right.
The death.
Right. And I want to get to that here in just a minute, because you see that in the comic book as well, and I kind of want to just touch on that a little bit. But in Dawn of Justice, you see, you know, Superman rescuing the people in, I would assume it's Mexico.
Yes. I think it was a burning building with a young girl.
Right. And he rescues her and brings her out, and all the people put their arms on him, and they're reaching out and touching him, and they're in awe of the presence that he has. And I see that as how he healed people, and people wanted to touch him. And there was the woman who had the issue of blood in the scriptures, and she reached out and she just touched the hem of Jesus's cloak, and she was healed. And I see that from that same kind of scene. And then there's the people who were in the floods.
Yeah, on the rooftops.
Right, and they're on the rooftops, and they got the S kind of spray painted there, and you see Superman as he descends with the light behind him.
Like from heaven.
Just kind of like cast down on him, and, you know, you just get that kind of feeling that, you know, he's like an angel, or he's, you know, that kind of a presence. And then, once again, I think later on in the film, is after he's fought Doomsday.
Doomsday.
And I think you mentioned it in our Superman podcast as well, but when he's struck down and you see Batman kind of wrap him in the cloak, in his cape, and lower him into the arms of Wonder Woman. And it's very reminiscent of lowering him from his cross, if you will, and just kind of...
Into his mother's arms.
Mary Magdalene.
In order to John the Apostle being there, kind of that.
Right. In order to have the burial. Yeah. And then you have the burial, and you see that it's a very symbolic thing for the country.
Yes.
And you see it's a quiet thing for his earthly mother.
Right.
Martha and...
His peers.
And his peers. And I think he got the same kind of thing. Now, here's the thing. In the comic book...
The great part of that end is where the gravel just shakes.
Right.
And it's like, oh, he's not dead. He's not dead yet. And kind of, you know, alludes to resurrection.
It's certainly alluding to it. And I think you see that in the comic book as he came back, right? I mean, we had the whole death of Superman. We all got our black bagged copies and with our armbands in there that had the S symbol with the blood dripping off of it. Yeah. And
I remember that. Yeah.
And, you know, probably a year later, after we had four different people come in and try their best to take over.
Yeah.
You know,
I think we got some gremlins running around.
Yep. Maybe a Krumpus. I don't know.
Ooh.
It's a little early for Christmas. Otherwise, I'd say reindeer.
It's around the corner.
It is. It's coming up quick. There were four. And if you think about it, Christ had his apostles. He had Peter, who was supposed to lead those apostles. There they are again.
We're in trouble.
Gremlins. And what they do, they went a-fishing. So, you know, you got these four guys who, they're going to try to play Superman. They're gonna do their best to try to do it. And, you know, it's a little different, but...
I always looked at, like, the Justice League being the apostles.
Yeah. In a way.
Because I kind of get the feeling like Superman's the leader and he's kind of like Jesus. And
then Lex Luthor did end up as part of the Justice League and he kind of does betray everyone.
Yeah.
He takes on Darkseid's power. Anyway.
But I was also going to say that you can look at it, when Superman steps down, Batman steps up
right
to run the Justice League. That could be Peter.
I really think Batman's the brains of the whole operation anyway.
Yeah. Wow.
But that's beside the point.
That's for a whole other
That's debate. A different topic. Anyway, then Superman comes back, and he comes back in black, and he's raring to go, and he comes in and tries to save the people and takes down, I believe it was Mongol, and takes down the cyborg Superman, and it just was very reminiscent of the resurrection and the fact mm-hmm. that Christ came back. He lives, mm-hmm. right? And yeah. I think both as a Catholic and as a Mormon, we both believe he lives.
Yeah.
And
we do.
He's not dead anymore. And so I think Superman is very much in that league. Now, I know Batman's probably going to call in and really rip us a new one here. So we might. That's
because we're talking soups again.
Well, yeah. We might want to move on a little bit just so that we don't have that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to interject
but just go ahead.
Two more things.
All right.
And then we'll wrap up soups, not to get
all right, Batman. Sorry, Batman. Thing. We'll make it quick. I promise.
Two things, you know, going back to the symbolism, especially in Batman versus Superman. One of the things that really struck me was the crucial weapon of that film being the kryptonite spear.
A spear of destiny.
Yes. And, you know, it was fashioned by Batman and, you know, ultimately used against Doomsday. And then Doomsday dies. You know, the creature's right arm takes on the form of the spear,
mm-hmm.
pierces Superman's chest.
Mm-hmm.
Could be symbolic of when Christ was pierced.
Even though that was his side, but there's some symbolism there.
Close enough.
I can see some symbolism.
You see the symbolism of the piercing of Christ on the cross. The spear of destiny.
Mm-hmm.
I also thought
there wasn't any blood. Did you notice that?
I didn't.
There wasn't any blood.
Yeah, it just was. Whoosh,
yeah,
right in.
Yep.
Interesting. Well, he is an alien.
Yeah, but we know he bleeds because Batman made him bleed.
Wow.
Remember, his lip was split.
That's true. Well, that's
because Batman's better than Doomsday.
That's because Superman was getting used
See,
to the.
See, now I think that might have just saved us a little bit. Yeah. Batman is better than Doomsday. Let's just roll with it.
That's because Superman is just getting used to the atmospheric pressure of the Earth.
Oh, he's been here for a while at this point. Human. Come on.
He's been here for 33 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, another subtle reference to Jesus.
Needs to soak up some more rays.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to throw in was, you know, I looked at Doomsday as the devil himself. Lex Luthor uses, you know, his Kryptonian technology to create Doomsday. We saw that in the film. And it's notable that, you know, doing so requires his blood. And what I found was interesting was a biblical piece of scripture from Leviticus 17:11. For the life of a creature is in the blood.
Yeah, I think I always saw the devil more in Luther. And here's why.
Yeah.
Here's why.
Yeah. The tempter.
Right. Yeah. You know, here's a guy who can practically convince anyone that he's doing the right thing. And I can guarantee Satan is going to tell you 1,000 truths to get you to believe one lie. And that's exactly what Luther is. Luther is going to do the exact same thing. He's a master manipulator. And that's
true.
The same thing as Lucifer. And I would kind of say that's more that way. And But
yeah,
I see your point. I see your point.
Yeah. I mean, I think with Superman, you know, you could call it the passion of Superman. We know that, you know, Superman's character...
We don't want to go there. That was a Mel Gibson movie.
Yeah, I wonder what. Just saying. You know.
I mean, that one doesn't fit in our topic today.
Mel ruined his own life anyways.
Yeah.
So, but with Superman, you know, he's willing to sacrifice himself to save the people of Earth. You know, he's reluctant to reveal his identity and powers to the world at times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the sake of them and himself. You know, and like you said earlier, he does turn himself over to Zod, kind of like handing himself over to Herod
or
Pilate.
Or the Sanhedrin, the Pharisees.
So I think, you know, in to wrap up Superman here as, you know, our first superhero of discussion in the world of Christianity. I mean, obviously he affects all of us in some way. There's a lot of tones to be brought from the first two films of Zack Snyder. And, you know, we see that Superman can be portrayed as a powerful messiah figure.
Mm-hmm.
We know that he's relentless you know, at saving the human race and Earth, and he can be looked upon as Jesus Christ in the comics, you know, with similarities in that he came to Earth, he didn't know his father, he has superpowers that can act in the sense of miracles, you know, which brings about stories like For Tomorrow as he grips life with vulnerability and understanding the meaning of his existence.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Cool. You know, so I think we've done Superman justice here today.
Well, hopefully. Outshining the Bat here.
No. The Bat is a totally different character.
Yeah, we know. So, you got another superhero you want to discuss the realm of Christianity?
Well, I think you have kind of one that you're very passionate about.
I do. That would be Mr. Matthew Murdock.
Right. You're AKA, very passionate about Matt Murdock,
aka Daredevil.
Yes.
So, yeah, we know Daredevil is, you know, perceived as a Roman Catholic Christian vigilante. Some can argue, is he truly being a Christian with his vigilante knights, you know, masquerading around as the vigilante and, you know, trying to protect Hell's Kitchen? You know, it's debatable.
I put that as kind of along the lines of Batman, in that he's out there trying to provide justice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's trying to make a difference. You know, we knew he grew up in an Irish-American community. You know, his family background came from basically an American working type class. You know, his father was a boxer who dealt with crime in Hell's Kitchen. You know, we know the backstory, for the most part, to Daredevil. But I think what really brought Daredevil to the forefront as a Roman Catholic, let alone a Christian, was Frank Miller. Once again, we're going back to Frank.
Yeah.
You know, Frank was very influential, I think, on bringing Matt Murdock forward.
Frank's books that we found out that Matt's mom became a nun.
Yeah, at the church. Born Again series.
Right, Born Again series.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of times where you'll see Matt Murdock sitting in a confessional talking to the priest.
Yeah.
And kind of like Matt here. Hey, yeah. Wait. That's...
What?
Yeah. We have confessional here, right? I mean, we've had it a couple times.
Comic confessions.
Comic confessions with Matt and Jeff.
We do need to do a comic confessions.
Oh, we totally are going to do a comic confessions. That's going to be a fun episode. We'll even take callers on that one. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, that'll definitely be interesting. Maybe our ratings will shoot up some more on this podcast.
It depends on what you confess.
Exactly. Hey, we all have skeletons in our closet.
That's true.
Even politicians.
They have more.
You know, we do find out that when Frank Miller, you know, pushed Daredevil out, Christianity was not the focus of the character in the beginning. It just kind of became this asset to who he was. It just was. I think back then, in that time period of the 60s, when Marvel was launching, Stan Lee and Bill Everett, who created Daredevil, they had him in mind as a Roman Catholic, but it wasn't something they put the emphasis on.
No.
You know, and pushed out. You know, it wasn't common at that time to push, I think, a lot of religion in comics. It was more about the story, the character.
But I think it makes him more relatable. It fleshes him out more to know that he has a religious background, and then to see how that affects the way he makes decisions. I mean, you saw it in the Netflix series, certainly.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Where there's times where he's at war within himself because he wants to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're blind and you've got super hearing to the point where you can tell if somebody's lying to you based on their heartbeat, I don't know if all blind people can do that, but he can. So when you can do that, he knows when someone's on the stand, if they're really telling the truth. Oh, and he's all about justice. He wants to see the people of Hell's Kitchen saved. He wants to protect them. He wants to provide them with a sense of justice. And I think that's why he does what he does. And the religious aspect of that character makes him a stronger character.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, going back to Frank, that's a big part of it. You know, he portrayed him in these Catholic religious type settings and situations. And I found a quote that Frank actually had said about Daredevil. He says, "I figured Daredevil must be Catholic because only a Catholic could be both an attorney and a vigilante." And I just thought that was a really interesting, you know, phrase to say. But yeah, you know, we see that you know, his mother's still alive with the Born Again series, and you see the relationship build.
Is he saying you guys are all conflicted?
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's why we rely on the Pope.
Fair enough.
Spiritual guidance.
Fair enough.
You know, pushing us forward. I think Miller pulled out every Catholic cliche, you know, to flavor Daredevil a bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, to make him more appealing, and it worked. You know, it even worked. I found, you know, doing some research also, that not only did it work for Daredevil, but Frank Miller also borrowed from Daredevil's Catholic background in other stories for Batman. That same maybe plane or atmosphere that he put Daredevil in, he drew from that to create some of the Batman stories we know today.
Well, there's aspects of Gotham City that certainly are reminiscent
mimic to Hell's Kitchen.
The stuff there. And I really think that Batman has influences of Christianity as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, yeah, Frank did interject a lot of that. And I think that he, you know,
Frank
is the man. We've been over that.
Yeah.
Frank is the man. Let's just, we're not worthy.
Yeah,
we're not worthy.
You know, Frank definitely depicted a very strong religious character in Daredevil, which I think opened up the doors to other stories for Daredevil. And like I said before, you know, being a Roman Catholic myself, it was a character I gravitated to. And I really enjoyed Daredevil and his inner struggle. You know, I think I could probably speak for most Catholics out there, you know, that we all have gone through some kind of faith-based struggle at any point in our lives.
Well, yeah.
And have circled back to where we need to be.
And I think that that's part of what kicked off the Marvel Knights.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, with Guardian Devil, there was a lot of faith-based conflict that he was dealing with.
Yes.
He was really struggling with his faith. I think that led to how that whole story shaped up, and he was being manipulated based on his faith.
Yeah.
You know, by...
Well, that story starts out as, you know, he's struggling to protect a child.
Right.
Who he is told could either be the next Messiah or the Antichrist. I mean, that's a huge burden to take on. You know, as a superhero who's already conflicted enough as it is.
He dated Elektra, dude.
Well, yeah.
I mean, how much more conflicted does he need to be?
But I... Yeah. Yeah, I know. He should probably go on Xanax.
I mean Prozac. Come on.
But I like what Kevin Smith did. He really set it up to say, hey, we're gonna push some religion here and make it a really interesting story. It's a religious crisis type world that Matt Murdock lives in.
And the whole fight with Bullseye takes place in the church.
Karen Page getting killed. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's just a lot that they interject in Daredevil.
Yeah, and Netflix, I think, has done a really good job.
I think so, too.
The internal conflict of Matt Murdock, you know, being in and outside the costume.
And we're going to get a season 3?
Heck yeah.
We don't know when, but we're going to get it.
I'm ready for it.
Booyah. it's been a great series on Netflix. I really enjoy it. I'm looking forward to Luke Cage, and when that comes out at the end of the month, expect for us to have a podcast on that sometime in October.
Definitely.
We'll definitely be talking Luke Cage.
Yep. Daredevil, I think there's a lot of Catholicism there. He is seen as a Christian. You know, with Daredevil, you know, there's questions of morality, there's questions of God in his life, and the devil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which kind of swirl around the center of who he is. You know, he's like out in limbo, as us Catholics kind of believe. We're out in purgatory.
Well,
swimming
and
around.
He dresses as a devil.
Well,
so, I mean, it's even more conflicted.
You know, he's desperate for justice in his community, and he pushes himself farther than he can go, you know, in order to be either the hero or the martyr.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I see Daredevil. He
gets beat up a lot.
Yeah, he's deciding, do I want to be the hero or do I want to be the hero and the martyr at the same time?
He needs to go take fighting lessons from Batman.
Well, he is an accomplished boxer and kickboxer.
Batman don't get beat up like that.
He's a master in martial arts. So he probably could learn a thing or two from Batman.
Batman takes his hits. But
some ninja skills.
Batman get beat up like Daredevil. It's not every week.
As much as we hate the Daredevil movie, there are some lines in that movie that stand out.
Well, there are some good lines in that movie. There's also some cool things. You know, as much as I hated seeing the way that Bullseye used glass in the fight scene in the church.
Lame.
But as much as I hated seeing that, it was cool to see the fight in the church.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, especially with all of the chimes and I guess it was actually the organ pipes he was hitting and using against Daredevil. I thought that was a great way of utilizing the surroundings of the church in that and making it a liability for Matt Murdock as well.
I think the CGI was still a little cheesy, underdeveloped at the time. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot of good lines in there. You know, I'll throw a few out. There's a point where Daredevil says, "Hey, that light at the end of the tunnel, guess what? That's not heaven."
Yep, I remember that one.
You know, and then obviously he's going after Jose Quesada, who got acquitted, who we all know is Joe Quesada. Had to throw your name in there, Joe. He says, I'll kill you.
It is a character that got killed.
Yeah, it was. I'm glad. He says, because he says, I'll kill you. And Daredevil says, that's the C train.
Yeah.
So, kasplat to Quesada there.
So, you know, that we wish any harm to Joe Quesada.
Yeah.
But sometimes we wish he would not be involved with some of the comic books. Because he really have
Joe Quesada just needs, in my opinion. He just needs to shut up and draw.
Yeah. Get back to the art, man. You rocked it, art. Yeah. We miss it. We miss your art.
Well, that's...
We miss your art.
Yeah, definitely. Go back to drawing Daredevil. I miss it. But some other lines were, you know, Daredevil says, "Can one man make a difference? There are days when I believe and others when I have lost all faith." Mm-hmm. You know, he also goes on to say, "I had set out to save the city, but with Elektra's help, I saved myself instead. Now I have faith that anything is possible. And some days, faith is all you need."
Well, and see, that kind of goes back to what the Savior said, too. He said, you know, those that lose their life will find it. Mm. And those that try to save their life will lose it. And I think it's the same kind of principle, you know, as Daredevil was trying to save someone else. He actually found out who he was supposed to be when he was doing what it was right.
I mean, there's a lot more dialogue, you know, there's a couple confessional scenes.
Yep.
You know, where he says, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been a week since my last." And then, you know, Father Everett says, "What the hell are you playing at, Matt? You didn't come here for forgiveness. You came here for permission. And I can't give you that." So Murdoch says, "Justice isn't a sin, Father." And the priest says, "No, but vengeance is. You see it every day on the street. Violence begets more violence. Is that how you want to live your life? A lawyer during the day and then judge and jury at night. Is that what you want?" And Murdoch says, "Somebody has to do something." Of course.
And so the Punisher did.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're going to get that series too on Netflix.
Right.
And I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
Wow. All this stuff kind of, you know, kind of leads into some other things.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of great lines still in that movie. I think the Netflix series also has a lot of great lines. You know, really harbors back to, you know, hardcore Catholicism in a sense. You know, I really gravitated to the Netflix series. I really enjoyed it. You know, I'd like to see a little bit more going back to, you know, his mother. You know, they touched on that briefly in season two. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he had some kind of a dream or he was punched and was having some kind of a fantasy type replay in his head, but you see kind of a nun-like figure come into one of the opening scenes of one of the episodes. But, you know, Daredevil will always be one of my most beloved characters, fighting crime and contemplating, you know, his own Christian morals and values.
I have to say, I think this is going to be a two-part episode.
Yeah, I think we are.
I think we're running low on time, and we're going to have to kind of move on. That being said, we have some great stuff for you for next week.
Yeah.
As we get into this, I see a lot of cool stuff coming up. There's some other heroes we're going to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. Some other Christian-based characters that made a huge impact in comics and are still flushing it out today.
Yep. And we also don't want to forget our pick of the weeks.
Yeah. Pick of the week.
Yeah.
Pick of the pow. Week. Pow. Pow, pow, pow. I know, that was a little too much, wasn't it?
Yeah. I was on a bad episode of Batman's TV show. And now you rip one. Wow. Dude, lay off the beans.
I mean, We got to get like a pow sound effect in here for the show.
Yeah, we'll have to get some pows in.
What is your pick of the week, Jeff?
My pick of the week is Batgirl and the Birds of Prey. It was recently done over with the rebirth.
Yeah.
And I think that it came out as a really cool comic. For those of you who haven't picked it up, I highly recommend it. You know, we're so used to dealing with the heaviest of hitters, with Batman, Superman, you know, even Green Lantern and Aquaman, and those who are our main focus in the Justice League, Wonder Woman, yeah. Certainly.
So I shouldn't talk about Batman as my pick of the week?
No, you can't.
Oh, okay.
You're certainly welcome to. But in that Bat universe, in that Batverse, if you will, in the Batverse.
Batverse.
Okay, we're at the Batverse. You have Batgirl, who is, at this point, Gordon, right? And she is the daughter of Jim Gordon, Barbara Gordon, and she, you know, she's younger. She's kind of been brought back into things with the last series, and so she's really excited. We've got a great young character here, and she's kind of moving on from being just in one city. You know, mm-hmm. She's kind of journeying out a little bit. And one of the things that's come up in this is somebody else has stolen her identity of Oracle.
What?
The identity of Oracle has been stolen. And she, for those of you who remember, after she got shot by the Joker in the mm-hmm. Killing Joke,
yeah.
She became Oracle. She was wheelchair bound. She decided she wasn't going to let that keep her down.
Yeah.
She continued to fight crime. And she was basically like the internet mm-hmm. for the Justice League.
You know, oh, yeah.
She was the one who had cameras everywhere. She could find out whatever she needed about anybody. That was done as Oracle. Well, now that she's Batgirl again, her legs have been restored. She's functioning. She's, you know, excited. She's young. She's vibrant. And her Oracle name has been stolen. Mm-hmm. Someone else is using it, and they're using it for crime. And so she recruits her friend from the original Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
Dinah Lance, better known as Black Canary.
Mm-hmm.
And they go out trying to find out who it is that's taken this name. And they're beating up mafiosos. And that's where they cross paths with the Huntress. Mm. And the Huntress we're going to talk more about next week.
Sweet.
Because she's another Christian-based character. And I think that we need to do her justice. The cool thing is you get to meet these three ladies. And they end up forming the Birds of Prey. And so the whole first story, or the first issue, really lays down their history together, where they are, how they end up where they are now. And then they start into this story really trying to find out the hunt for who Oracle really is, mm-hmm. to
cool.
take down this Oracle. And I think that it's certainly worth reading. And if you're not pulling it, I recommend you do.
Oh, I'm pulling it. I've been pulling it.
That's because he was talking about Superman.
You mentioned chicks, and it's a Justice-ly load coming out. I mean, we got to interject the word load again, since you used it quite a bit last podcast. Yeah.
It's a good word. It applies to several different things.
Load?
Yeah, load. Yeah.
Did you have any other pick of the weeks?
That's my pick of the week. Well, other than Cincy Comic-Con, which we've already been through.
Yeah.
You know, sorry you missed it. Try again next year.
Right.
It's a great show.
Sweet. Well, I'll get to my pick of the week then. I got to throw some Batman back out there just to keep him from calling in. I did find out that...
Feeling the Batman love.
Good old Burt Ward and Adam West are doing an animated Batman film that was supposed to be due out a while from now, but they've pushed it up to...
Yeah, I thought it was sometime early next year originally.
Yeah. They pushed it up to October, but for select cities. So hopefully,
but it is coming out in the theater in select cities.
Yes, but they haven't said which cities yet. So hopefully it's coming to our city.
Okay, because I thought it was just going to be direct to Blu-ray, DVD. So that's cool. If you get a chance to see it in the theater.
Yep, October 10th.
I mean, jump on it.
Yeah, otherwise we got to wait till it comes out to DVD or
it's probably about
on
the
demand
same time.
Or Netflix.
It'll
or,
probably
you know,
be around the same
things.
Time that it'll
so,
come out on Blu-ray and DVD.
I think it'll be cool. I think it'd be great to hear those guys' voices. We all know DC does some really great animated movies.
Batman.
The other thing I want to throw out there for pick of the week, Supes. They've got a whole series of photos out there online of Tyler Hoechlin. in the Supes costume and as Clark Kent. So it looks real interesting. So Supergirl season 2, I believe, is coming up soon.
Yeah, it starts, I believe, October 10th.
Yeah, so we should be seeing, you know, episodes
early in October. Yeah,
Superman in there with Supergirl.
Yes.
And
we like Supergirl. Melissa Benoist is a cutie. And what?
Cutie.
Well, yeah, she's
smoking.
She's darn hot. What I didn't realize, she was in season 4 of Glee.
Oh, geez. Good old Glee.
You know, I just happened to be hanging around the house, chilling, doing some more drawing today, and I thought I'd throw on some, throw on something to kind of go in the background there on Netflix.
Yeah.
And sure enough, there she was. She was in Glee, and, not my typical TV, but it was fun.
Oh, you got to get your start somewhere.
You know, I like hearing the music while I work.
There you go. And speaking of smoking hot.
Uh-oh. Gal Gadot, are we going to talk Wonder Woman again?
I would love to talk about her, but I want to bring up another actress.
Uh-oh.
Who actually gave good old Jeff here some credit.
Ah, yes. Yes.
And
yes,
I'm going to let you run with this one.
Yes, she did. And
on your...
I gotta pull that up.
On your...
Make sure that I do that right, because I want to make sure I get her name exactly.
This is big news
right
to
here.
All your listeners out there for Jeff being an artist and getting his art out there to the world and partaking in the comic conventions around the Midwest. So, to his surprise...
Yes, to my surprise, I did an illustration just probably last week and put it out there on Instagram. And one of the things that was really cool was this actress who plays Pam. She's in 8 episodes of Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm.
The picture I did was Luke Cage and Iron Fist.
Iron Fist, yeah.
Okay. And it is on my Instagram. It was a cover. You know, they had blank comics. And so I went ahead and I drew the cover. And Susie Abromiat, she responded and liked that artwork. And sure enough, she plays Pam and Jessica Jones. Really thought that was pretty cool. She was in 8 episodes. So
yeah, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Actresses liking my art.
Yeah.
Love it.
Definitely.
Thank you, Susie. If you're listening,
yes,
I really appreciate the like. I appreciate you taking a look at my artwork. I think that's great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's awesome.
One day we'll have you on the podcast.
Yes,
we can talk Jessica Jones.
Yes,
or whatever else you're doing.
Oh, yeah, whatever. We're down for it. So,
drop us a line.
You got it. Well, I think that about wraps it up from here.
I wonder if she'll be in season 2.
I hope she's in season 2.
Oh, I'm all over it.
Yeah, she's pretty smoking.
Yeah, she's a cutie.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. All right.
So, yeah, well, that wraps it up from here for, Christianity and Comics. Stay tuned for...
Part 1.
Stay tuned for part 2 of Christianity and Comics. So thank you all for listening in, and we'll see you next time.